Hello and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint, the podcast highlighting and telling the stories of influential leaders in around the sports industry. Today, we're excited to welcome our next guest, Danielle Byrne, to the show. Danielle is the founder and CEO of Tackle What's Next and has dedicated her career to helping athletes understand their full potential. Her focus on the athlete as an individual rather than a cog in the sports industry machine has created unique opportunities and impacts in the sports space. Danielle earned her degree in sports management from Syracuse University and went right into work helping athletes at Brewer Sports International. She eventually branched out, started her own venture, DB Consulting, which has helped athletes and nonprofits collaborate to make more of an impact on society. Now, she now spends the majority of her time focused on Tackle What's Next, and her line of work couldn't be more timely with the turbulent environment that athletes are going through with this COVID shakeup. Danielle currently lives in Washington, D.C., but for the next 45 minutes, she's here with us on Checkpoint. Danielle, welcome to the show. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, Scott. Thank you so much for having me and for that really nice introduction. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, man, I am so excited to have you on the show. You know, for all you first-time listeners tuning into Checkpoint, we're going to take the next 45 minutes and really start to understand Danielle's journey, how she got here, what she's currently doing, which is incredible, and based on all that knowledge, where she sees things going. So, you know, Danielle, I know traditionally we have athletes on the show and we have athletic directors, but you come to us with a different angle. So we got a ton to unpack. Where does the journey start? Let's go back to childhood. And how did you end up in the sports profession?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm not an athlete by any means. You know, I played sports for fun, but was not really talented. So I just grew up in a family that revolved around sports, big fans of sports. And I always was intrigued with what went on behind the scenes to make everything happen. And eventually my mom was like, why don't you try and get involved in that? Like, somebody's got to run the halftime show. Somebody's got to do all the things behind the scenes to make sure everything goes smoothly. Like, if that's what you're interested in, there's got to be something out there. And that's really where I found out about the entire industry of sports business and sports management. And that's where I decided I really wanted to invest my time and learn and study.
I love it. So when you went to Syracuse, at this point in the journey, did you know, hey, sports are on the radar, or were you still trying to figure out what area you were going to go into? What was that sort of like as you were formally getting educated?
Yeah, I definitely knew sports was an area I wanted to be in by that point. I had done a couple internships in the Baltimore area where I'm from, and you know, I really loved it. I was passionate about it. And so I went to Syracuse knowing they had a pretty good program and decided that's where I wanted to spend my time. So I went in as a sport management major my freshman year. And I stuck with it the entire 4 years I was there.
Awesome. Awesome. And you know, one of the things with sports is there's always a unique angle in which you're able to break into the industry. And, you know, I was super fortunate. I played collegiate football. I knew I didn't want to go the traditional path of a coach or an administrator. So I took the path of technology. When you wrapped up your time at Syracuse, were there opportunities in the sports world for you to dive head in, or what was that transition like for you to actually break into the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, being in the sport management department at a big school, you know, they're always talking about a lot of the opportunities that are out there. And a lot of them are traditional opportunities. Like you said, it's the teams or working in communications or marketing, but there are a lot of outside angles. And I wasn't really aware of those. I will say, I really thought I was going to go work for a team, but I did my internship and ended up getting hired on at Brewer Sports, like you mentioned. And that was founded by a former athlete who decided to start his own consulting firm. And it's honestly, you know, that really exposed me to a ton of different opportunities in the industry. And the fact that, you know, the teams and the marketing and the communications is just one piece of sports. There's all these surrounding things. You mentioned technology, community, impact, like, you know, sponsorship, all these companies that are investing in sports, they have staff that work primarily on those partnerships. And they're in the sports industry, even if they work for a beverage company or a health foods company or a, you know, fitness company, like they're in there. And so I think it's just opened my eyes to the fact that there's a lot of opportunities out there in sports that you might not learn about in a classroom, but they're there, and they're where the industry is moving towards, really.
Yeah, and I think some of those opportunities, right, the ones that we'll call on the fringe, you almost have to go search for those, right? Or almost create them, right? You have to start just networking and becoming relatable in the space. And you bring up some interesting points, you know, because sports has tiers, right? You have the organization, you have the team, then you have the player, and you have the support staff around it. One of the things from being a former player and running Checkpoint is the athlete tends to get neglected in the education process throughout their journey as an athlete. So when they're done, it's sort of, what do I do next?
Exactly.
So I'm curious, before we get into your venture that you're doing now, you know, when you were at Brewer Sports, you know, obviously there was an education component. What were some of the nuggets that you pulled from there that have helped you become successful with your own venture?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you hit the nail on the head. It's like almost like the athletes are a product of the sports industry and not a member of the sports industry. They're kind of told, here's what we want you to do. Here's what we want you to show up. And, you know, as a former athlete yourself, you can understand, like, they try and take all these external pressures off the table for you. So they kind of want you to focus on sport and playing sport. And that's pretty much it, right? Like, they don't want you to deal with how you're going to get there, how you're going to, you know, what time you're supposed to wake up. They're like, we'll tell you all that. You just focus on working out and being the best you can be, which is great, right? It maximizes your potential to be fit. But I think when that career eventually inevitably ends, whether it's really quick or whether it's a really nice long career, you don't necessarily have the well-roundedness that you should have being a really vital part of the sports industry. I mean, without the athletes, there is no sports industry to even work in and work for. And so, you know, tides are changing, I think, a lot now. But when I was working at Brewer Sports, that was really my first exposure to the drop-off, as I like to call it, is like when you retire or you graduate and all those people that were calling and texting and checking in and seeing how you were doing or setting up things for you and coordinating things for you, they start to disappear because you're no longer in the spotlight. They start to say, oh, well, he's retired or she's retired. So now we're going to move on to these players that are still active. They still have the buzz. And that's a hard thing for an athlete to get used to, because not only is your life changing, but the people around you are no longer, you know, for better or worse, as committed to supporting you and to checking in and saying, what are you doing? You know, how's everything going? Like, they have other priorities that they have to focus on. And so for me, that was really the first time I'd experienced this, where athletes were just like, I'm done with my passion, my purpose in life, and I have nothing else to do. Like, where's the next thing? And I think that was one of the biggest things that that was where I got aware of the problem and the fact that there weren't a lot of solutions out there. You know, there's people out there doing amazing things individually and athletes that have done an amazing job transitioning on their own. But a lot of times they have a support system. And for those athletes that might not have a support system or may not have the opportunity to, you know, try a bunch of things, that may not have been exposed to a bunch of things at a young age, they struggle. And it's a tough thing to wrap your brain around. And so I think what I really got, the pieces of, you know, kind of wisdom that I saw from my first job, was this affects everyone differently, but at the same time, it's an overarching issue in the industry that we need to fix. And so that's really where I got passionate about it. And you hit the nail on the head with the education piece. A lot of times it's just exposing these athletes that, you know, whether you're playing in college, whether you're playing a revenue sport or a non-revenue sport, the education piece is so important, really understanding the value that you have as an athlete, whether, again, you're making the potential to have 20 million followers, or if you're just going to have, you know, a really good network of people that, because you played field hockey for a school, right? You know, there's still things you can leverage and experiences and skills that you've gained. And so I think for me, it was an eye-opening experience to see, like, how important it is that we start talking to athletes about this while they're playing, while they're getting into sports, and really understanding the opportunities there. Because as great as it is to help athletes after they retire, there's a lot of missed opportunities that, you know, you could say, oh, well, did you do this while you played for this team? Oh, no, I didn't know I was supposed to be doing that. Or, oh, I didn't think about that. Now you're out of sports. The connections are harder to make than if you're playing for a team, right? You can use that name and bust down any door you want. So I think that was one of the things I saw too, was like, it's really important to help athletes at all levels, whether they've retired or not, but it's way easier for athletes to get a grip on what's their next purpose while they're still playing, while they're still living their dream, take 5 minutes, make a connection, think about where you want to go, invest in some education programming, and get things in front of these guys and girls so that they don't experience the sheer cliff drop off, you know, at age 29 or 30 or 33, where they're like, holy crap, what do I do now with all this rest of my life ahead of me? So that those are kind of the pieces of wisdom I saw really early on.
It's incredible insight. And you know, coming from my lens where those education resources may have passively been there. And this was at, you know, a group of five Division I college, you know, as that continues to go downstream or upstream, those resources are scarce, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, as you've become immersed in the industry and the times are evolving and changing with sport, do you see education platforms, content starting to enter the athlete journey and cycle earlier on? Or if you don't mind just shedding some perspective on what that education piece looks like from your lens.
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And we're all really hoping that we do see it moving earlier and earlier in that athlete kind of career span. I would say it's definitely a lot better than it was, you know, 5-6 years ago when I was working at Brewer Sports. They're really, like you said, there was stuff there. It was very passive. If you wanted to look into it, you could find it, but you had to really do some digging or reach out to people and ask. It wasn't just there at your fingertips, ready to click. And I think now it's certainly something where you see a lot more athletes, first of all, publicly talking about what they're doing outside of the game, which is great. That's the fastest way to move the needle, is to have guys like CJ McCollum and LeBron James, these superstars that are also focusing on other things, right? They're not just all basketball. And same with the NFL, you know, there's guys like JJ Watt that are really creating community impact programs that are incredible. And, you know, he's doing it while he's also succeeding on the field. And so I think those are great examples, and that really helps move the needle for younger athletes to say, well, if these guys are thinking about it, I should be too. But, you know, I think there's still a long way to go. I think a lot of times the focus is still athlete first, then everything else. And, you know, unfortunately in an industry that's like sports, very revenue driven, it's going to be like that. And so I think we need more athletes to feel empowered to stand up and say, okay, that's great. I am going to focus on being an athlete, but in my spare time, instead of playing video games for 6 hours, I'm going to go and research some career opportunities. Maybe I'll connect with a couple of executives and industries I'm interested in. And so for us, education platforms are more just awareness at this point. I think that's really the key, is you've got some really highly motivated people here. You don't need to necessarily teach athletes how to get a job or teach them how to succeed. You just have to show them the skills they already have and how, what the game plan is, right? I mean, they know how to execute a game plan. You're an athlete, you know that if someone's like, this is how you do it, you're gonna be like, okay, got it, no problem. Like, you can motivate yourself to do it. And I think that's really the area that I see, is it's the resources we need to give athletes to say, look, we're not asking you to go get 3 full-time internships while you're playing college sports or while you're in the pros, but start to think about, who can you network with? Who do you know in the team front office? Who's an athletic department that you can talk to? Those are what you need to start doing, right? You mentioned the networking piece. It's that's huge. That's a huge part of what you can do. And I think the education life cycle needs to be awareness from a young age at a high level, whether it's high schoolers going into college, college students playing sports. They're the ones that need to know it's time to start leveraging what the sport can do for you, as well as what you can contribute to the team, contribute to that. You need to take some self-interest as well and say, look, I'm a team player, but I also need to know what I'm going to be doing after graduation or after pro sports. And I think that's really the education we're trying to push forward, is you do have to be a little selfish about this. You have to set yourself up for success. You don't want to ruin your opportunities on the field. And that's where I always say, it could take 5 minutes to just go on LinkedIn, research some people in your area, and send them a really nice note asking if they'd connect with you so you can do an informational interview, right? That's super helpful. You saw with Duncan Robinson in Miami Heat, that came out that he reached out to someone from The Ringer, you know, like three years ago, because he wasn't sure what was going to happen next with his career. Like, regardless of what happened, he set himself up to at least make a connection, right? And now look where he is. It worked out really well for him, obviously. But those are the kinds of things where we're not saying go get an internship with Deloitte and work 40 hours a week on top of everything else you're doing, but start to think about stuff, start to make some connections, and the fact that he was playing, you know, for Duncan Robinson's case, he was playing at a D1 school in basketball, guarantee he got a response. I mean, clearly the guy saved the text message. He thought it was really cool. And so if you are playing right now, you have that in. And so I think that's where we need to start educating athletes is you are never going to be more important than you are while you're on the field, while you're on the court, regardless of what level. People will engage with you, connect with you, respond to you at the very least, right? And so I think that's the key is like, hey, just be aware of the opportunity in front of you and start to use sport as a tool for you as well.
Yes, you bring up so many great points. And I think, you know, one of the things where we do our athletes a disservice is while they are in this coachable mentality at a young age, instead of being proactive and driving holistic measures to make sure that these athletes are successful for life after sport, we really, like you said, just pour all that energy into the one thing they're good at. And you know, I've learned, and, you know, as I define success, and that continues to evolve for me, that balance is key there. And so, you know, we see not only, you know, a lot of squandered finances by athletes because they don't really understand how to leverage their platform, but we see huge mental health implications as well. And there's a big drop off in the way that we personify the athlete versus the reality of what's going on. And so I'm curious, as you've had the had the opportunity to work intimately with athletes as they go through their, you know, collegiate and professional career, talk to me about, you know, when they are wrapping up their pro journey. Do you see them just falling off the cliff there? And if so, how are you helping them get back to a place where they're functional in society?
Yeah, for some people, it is a really big mental health challenge. I mean, you have to think about it like this. You've been living your dream, and all of a sudden someone says, okay, that's over. See you later. It's almost, I kind of give the visual of like you're walking off the field for the last time. The lights are, you know, turning off, you're the only one there and you're walking out into the tunnel to nothing. Like you don't know, it's unknown. It's just there. You know that you're looking back behind you, the stadium's empty and you're like, well, this is it. Right. And it's just really scary. I mean, you think about, like you said, you've put your whole energy, motivation, focus into this one thing. And everyone said, this is what you're good at. This is what you are the best at in the world. You're going to be amazing at this. But when that's over, and it does end for every single athlete at any level, you know, at least before they're 45, right? You use like the Tom Brady example. He's like the anomaly. But like, you know, by the time he's 45, like this could be over for him too, right? So it's like you hopefully. Again, yeah, exactly, you know. But at the same time, like for the majority of athletes, by the time you're 30, it's over. And it's a tough transition. And so you see a lot of identity loss. You see a lot of people that have associated their identity with their sport because just like you said, they've been told their whole lives, you're a great football player. You're a great soccer player. You're an amazing volleyball player. And when those opportunities start to go away, they're like, well, what? That was what I was good at. That was all I know how to do. And so I think that's where you see the mental health challenges come in because then they feel this depression of, well, that was all I had to look forward to. That was what my life was, and I'm losing that opportunity. And so you do see a lot of mental health struggles, and I think that's where we really try, you know, for those that haven't gotten there yet, we try and say, find something else you also can enjoy. Take your identity away from your sport. You are not a football player. You're someone who's very good at football, but you're also someone else. You're also someone else. You're like, everybody has these multifaceted identities. And like you said, for athletes, we always scale them into one box. We're like, this is what you're good at. You're an athlete. Oh, maybe you're an athlete investor. Maybe you're an athlete philanthropist, an athlete advocate, an athlete change maker. You could be all those things, right? But it's hard to figure that out. So I think what we always try to do is, let's say we're working with somebody that has experienced this loss. They haven't had a ton of awareness or time to think about it. We work them through it. We say, okay, you know, this is really, you know, a bummer that this ended. Like, we get it. It's depressing. It's sad. All of those things. But at the same time, look at all the opportunities now that are in front of you for you to really start to learn and grow and become passionate about something else. I can't promise it's going to be just as exciting and fun as their sport was for them. But at the same time, you know, they have this unique opportunity to really find and explore other areas that they've never ventured into before. And the amount of dedication and drive they've put into sports, they can do it with anything. I mean, again, it's the tangible skills are there. It's just teaching athletes that you've had this amazing career experience that you can translate into anything you want. So it's working them through, what else are you good at? What else do you like? There are other things, like I promise you. Even if it's, I love video games. Okay, why do you love video games? Do you love creating? Do you love storytelling? Do you love, you know, the technical side of things? Like there's things you can pull from interests and things that you spend time doing without even thinking about it. And you can pursue that. And I think the biggest thing is taking the fear of failure out of it. I think for athletes, when you reach a high level, it's like, I got to be here all the time. I got to be at the top of the top. I can't fail at this new thing or else what am I good at? And it's like, people fail all the time. Athletes fail all the time in sports, but it's the scary thing of like, well, I can't fail in business because, you know, I don't get a next game. I don't get a next job. It's like, yes, you do. Yes, you do. You know, you do. And for me, I always compare it to like, you know, athletes are afraid to start from the bottom again because they've seen the climb up to the top. You have to. I mean, you can't walk into, you know, a company and say, hey, I'm going to be your executive vice president of marketing. I just finished a career in football. They're going to be like, why don't you start as a marketing manager and we'll work you up the system, right? I mean, you didn't start coming and playing football at, you know, the NFL. You started in either little league or high school or even middle school, and you worked your way up. And you got to do that in anything else you're interested in. And that's why it's nice to start early, because if you're starting while you're in school, you can start to build that experience so that when it's time for you to leave sports, you can go in at a high level because you've already done a lot of the grunt work to get there.
Exactly right. And you know, life is, you know, people will say life is like climbing a mountain. The higher you get, the harder it is to breathe, the more, you know, rocky the terrain gets. And then getting to the top and staying at the top is one of the hardest things because, you know, it's not supposed to, you know, you're out of your element there at the top. And so listening to the Bill Belichicks and the Nick Sabans, that's always a fascinating thing. And I'd like to take that analogy and extrapolate it a little bit to say life is a mountain range, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have peaks that you're going to get to the top, and then you're going to have valleys where you talk about that failure. And I think one of the things that, you know, as athletes, we inherited this system. We inherited this business, and it was very antiquated for the time that we're living in, right? Well, if we use the idea of football in the industrial era versus football in the digital era, right, completely different experiences for the organization, the team, and the player. And you know, one of the things where I think we do a disservice to our athletes is teaching those soft skills, right? And so we have the opportunity here to start to mold individuals to be successful, to leverage the assets and the platforms that they have in front of them. And we don't do that, mm-hmm. right? So at this point in the checkpoint, we're gonna transition a little bit here, because it's one thing to expose a problem, it's another to now come with a solution. So let's take a dive in to tackle what's next, because this to me is pioneering the future. We just have Miriam Glez on, who is running a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing athletes and influencers start to come back and elevate the athlete. Why don't you go ahead and fill the listeners into what is Tackle, what's next? Why'd you create it? Really excited to go, you know, down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, I think it's so important too. Like, we know the problem now, I think, right? You mentioned, we see the problem, we see where the gaps are, and now it's up to people to start filling those gaps and start creating those solutions. And so I'm just really excited to be able to join people like Miriam and Athlete Soul and all the great work people are doing from former athlete backgrounds, to be able to join them and support and push their mission forward. So, you know, here at Tackle What's Next, we're really about helping athletes find their purpose after sport. And, you know, we work with athletes that are still in, you know, the sports world, and those that have retired, both college and professional. But really our goal is to help them create impact when they're done. Whether it's community impact, whether it's impact in their own lives, in their own families, whatever it is, we want them to find that purpose and understand the role they can play, you know, in their own lives and in their own communities. And so, you know, for us, the biggest thing we do is we educate. We want to educate athletes about, one, all the opportunities out there for them, that there is absolutely no right way to transition, no wrong way to transition, because it's an individual experience. There's no cookie cutter, here's what you do, here's the course you take, and it's good to go, you did it. It's very much a subjective process. So Scott, you transitioned very differently than Miriam, and Miriam transitioned very differently than, you know, let's say a Peyton Manning, right? Like, everybody has their own unique experience. It depends on your level of fame, your level of success, what, how old you are, what sport you played, what part of the world you're in. I mean, it's, every athlete goes through this across the world, but it's very different compared to your local experience. And so what we really try and do is, you mentioned the soft skills. We want to make them aware of the soft skills they have, right? Leadership, coaching, you know, taking constructive criticism. They have them. We don't need to teach them that. They have it. But like you said, we want to help them understand where their other interests are and how to pursue them. And so using those soft skills as a launching point to say, oh, well, I have just as much experience as any graduate from college who's had an internship, because I've learned how to do this. I just might not have the industry related experience that I need. Well, how do you go get that? How do you go get that experience? And then what do you do with that? How do you communicate like what you're interested in? How do you communicate where you want to go with your next steps? And for some people, how do you figure out what that is? Like, I think that's the biggest challenge we see sometimes, is some athletes are like, I don't know what I want to do. Like, I want to do something, but I don't know what that is. And so sometimes it's just a self-discovery conversation and journey that we're helping them learn, like, oh, that would be interesting. And it's trial and error a lot of times, you know, like you said, there's peaks and valleys. You try something, it's great, then you hate it, and you're like, all right, move on to the next thing. This wasn't for me. But yeah, we really do feel like the solution is individualized. And that's a harder sell for a lot of people, because they want that quick cookie cutter. I put my money down and I get this result. It's very much an internal process. It's very much internal work. You mentioned the identity and mental health side of things. Until that part is solved, nothing else is going to work. And so that's really what we believe, is it's really in an individualized process. We need to be aware of the issues that we mentioned. We need to talk about the self-discovery for each individual we're working with. And at the end of the day, like, they have to do the work. They're going to get out of it what they put into it. And if they take it very superficially, then they're going to get superficial results. And if they really put the time in to dig deep into, what do I want to do? Where do I see myself? What do I want to accomplish in the world? They seem like very like pie in the sky questions, but it's funny how little we actually sit down and think about that kind of thing, and how often we really don't pay attention to what we really want to do versus what we're supposed to do, or what society says we should do, or where we're supposed to go, what our mom wants us to do, what our sister wants us to do, whatever. We want to hear what you want to do. And that's a hard question to answer. Like, you know, sometimes, like you said, like, we go through these different ups and downs. Like, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up, right? And it's you know, it's that constant evaluation and journey of self-discovery. It never ends. And I think that's the biggest key to teach athletes. It's like, you're never going to be done transitioning. Never, ever, ever. Because you're always going to be growing and changing and learning. And so we just really, you know, at the end of the day, we want to raise awareness for that and get that safe space for athletes to really explore, find their passions, change their passions, fail at their passions, right? Like, just do all that stuff. And what we try and do is capture that advice, wisdom, and content to really share with their fellow peers to say, look, you know, this is what XYZ athlete that played field hockey at University of Virginia, I'm just making that up, but, you know, just play, you know, says that helped her when she was transitioning into a financial career. And then she didn't like finance anymore. And then she decided she wanted to work in nonprofit. And so that's, she made that shift. And now she runs this organization. And, you know, just showing that, like, there's no such thing as the perfect transition. It's all subjective. So, a long answer to your question, but that's what we do.
Great answer. And you bring up so many key elements there. One, they're very coachable, right? They're used to having that coach or mentor. And you go into the professional world, and that's not so one-to-one, right? Like, there's, you know, you sink or swim is usually the mentality when you get out into the quote-unquote real world. And so that's a big drop-off, where you have somebody there as your accountability buddy, somebody, you know, really mentoring you through the ropes. Couple that with a linear vision of success when you have a season or when you have a game. There's a start and there's a stop. Right. Yeah. So that makes it very digestible. And I think it's overwhelming when you come out of that environment to now an environment where it's just life. You know, it was funny. One of my coaches said, you know, the key to business is staying in business, right? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's not this win or loss thing. It's like, just stay in business and you're doing better than most. And so, yeah. There's just so much to unpack, but I'm curious your experience, right? So when we talk about being vulnerable and creating a safe space for athletes to sort of go through this, do they start with themselves, or do you find the tendency to say, hey, I want to take all of this energy that was in football, field hockey, soccer, and pour it into another venture? Or do you find them saying, hey, I want to sit in my own shit for a little bit and figure out who I am and then try and go? What has been your experience when engaging with athletes?
Yeah, it's certainly more of the former. I mean, there's so much energy, there's so much excitement, motivation, you know, even if they are really scared about what's coming, they want to go, they're active, they want to push forward. They don't want to sit in their shit, right? To use the expression. Yeah. I don't think anybody does, but really it's sometimes hard to get athletes to think about, okay, sit down and write a list of what do you want to do? Like, what do you like? What are your interests? Do some passion research, as one of our speakers at one of our panels called it. She talked about passion research, and it was such a great way to describe it. It's like, this is researching yourself. Nobody's ever asked you to do that before, but we want you to take the time to research yourself. What I always say is, look, there's no right way, just like being an entrepreneur, there's no right way to do it. There's no wrong way to do it. Like you said, the key is to do it and to continue to do it, right? You know, there's no like, this is the game plan to being an entrepreneur. It's like, nope, if you start a business and it's still going, you're doing a good job, right? And I think for athletes to understand, like, you can go and get a job and be doing this stuff as you work. Like, that's totally fine. If you don't want to do that, that's also totally fine. And so again, like you said, it's that kind of understanding that the real world has no start and end. It has no like right play and wrong play. It's subjective. There's shades of gray in every aspect. And what we've really found that a lot of athletes struggle with is that shade of gray. It's not a black and white answer. There's not a correct path. There's not a like playbook that you can read and master and say, did it, accomplished it, check, transition off the list. I'm now a professional lawyer. I'm doing amazing. Like, you're still going to have shades of gray in your law career where you're going to be like, now what? Like, what's the next move? Yeah, it's really hard.
I went through this and it's like, you know, I was a punter. Right? Very mechanically driven. If you drop the ball this way, you swing your leg, 8 out of 10 times, you're going to have success.
Right.
Okay. So I go into the sales world and I go look at the sales process and I'm like, okay, well, I'm doing steps 1 through 4 exactly how I'm supposed to. Why am I not getting that success? And you hit the nail on the head, because we have the mentality, but that doesn't always translate into the environment. Yeah. And so I think it's really exciting to say, well, if that environment isn't working for this subset of people, but we know that they have the intangible soft skills that they've curated through sport, well, then why try and fit a square peg in a round hole instead of just going and creating the environment for these athletes to be successful, give them a safe space to be vulnerable? Because at the end of it, what I learned through, and this is just my personal experience, was until I faced those demons that I would use football to escape from, until I went back and addressed those with myself, I was defining success in a reactionary mode, right? It was always just to avoid the inevitable. And I think a lot of athletes fall victim to that, yet we put them on a pedestal and encourage that behavior. Yeah. And so it's really cool to see the pendulum shift and see folks like a Dak Prescott come out and just be so vulnerable on a national stage and say, excuse my mouth, listeners, but fuck you, traditional media and stigma. We are breaking this and evolving. And so really, really commendable work with what you're doing. Now, we're doing a lot of work at Czech with college athletes, right? Mm-hmm. That's our bread and butter market. So as name, image, likeness starts to come downstream, are you having conversations with athletic departments or coaches to try and make more of a broadened effort to get visibility what you're doing? Or what is your approach as these athletes are encouraging or experiencing this earlier and earlier in their careers.
Yeah, such a good point. It's like, even back to what you're saying about, you know, just the media landscape, sports is changing so quickly. Like the entire sports industry this year really has also just spurred it into a new direction that, you know, even in 2019, we probably wouldn't have seen. And, you know, I think that's the key, is like, it's getting younger and younger. Sports is becoming, for better or for worse, right, it's professional at any level at this point, you know. And I think we'll see some pushback to that at a younger level. But at the same time, education is so much more important now than ever, because now it's not just 21-year-olds and 22-year-olds that are getting access to tons of money, and without the knowledge and education behind it, it's going to be 17 and 18-year-olds, and they're going to be away from home from the first time, and they're going to sign a contract, and it's going to be like, I am a billionaire now, right? And it's that education of, okay, what's the regulations behind this? How do you stay eligible? How do you not screw up your future, right? And also, is this the best deal for you? Is just taking the first deal that comes down the line really the best option if you're going to be in an, you know, exclusive no more beverage deals for 5 years, you know, opportunity, and you're a freshman? Like, maybe that's not the best deal for you. And so I think, you know, for us, we are having a lot of conversations with athletic directors, with schools, about what we can do to support. And we've had a couple conversations on our own platform with legal minds, financial minds that are doing a lot, like Team Ultimus is doing a ton in the name, image, and likeness space. And so we've had them speak at a couple of our events. Courtney and her team have done a really great job of focusing primarily on the financial implications and what athletes need to know from that aspect. And so for us, we're really, again, trying to raise awareness that now more than ever, as a college, you need to be educating your athletes, because you know what's going to look really bad is if a bunch of your athletes are making really inappropriate deals, or if they're signing contracts they shouldn't be signing because the school kind of looked the other way and said, well, this isn't our deal, this is this athlete's deal. And also, what does that mean for your other athletes that aren't signing those deals, right? I think that's where we kind of come in, is we say, look, this is going to make the gap bigger between the celebrity athletes and the non-celebrity athletes. And we need to support all of the athletes, not just those that are bringing in ticket sales for your university. And I think they do a, you know, a decent job at, you know, making sure resources are available to all of their athletes. But I think as you see NIL come in, it's going to change that landscape of, you know, someone's going to get paid for a post they do on Instagram and their teammate's not going to make any money. And so I think you have to figure out, as a school, how do you regulate that? And how do you keep that chemistry and dynamic of the student athlete fair and equitable for the field hockey players and the, you know, tennis players and those that, you know, probably aren't going to be signing a ton of name, image, and likeness, you know, contracts and things like that. And so I think for us, it's, we need to go after those kids more to say, look, there's things you can do too to set yourself up for success. You know, you might not be going to play at the US Open, but you can still create some really good relationships and set yourself up for a great career after sports. And I think that's where we're trying to come in and say, how can we support you? What resources can we give you as a university? But also, you know, what are you lacking? Where's the gap? Where do you see? What are you guys missing? And we're talking to schools that, you know, aren't necessarily the largest in the country. We're talking to schools that might not have the capabilities to hire a name, image, and likeness consultant, that might not have the, you know, the time and the resources to create content programming. You know, the Maryland's, the Texas, the UCLA's, like, they have done an incredible job and used some of their resources, but they have a lot of booster money to use, right? And that, so I think we're also targeting some smaller schools that might see one or two players be able to take advantage of name, image, and likeness and really make sure they're well-educated and have the resources that they need to support them and their other students that, you know, are still going to be going about their normal student-athlete lives.
No, 100%. And, you know, one of the things, you know, with name, image, and likeness as it comes down the pike is, it's going to continue to expose how we do not evolve humans through our education system holistically. And so I think one of my hopes of this is, as we're moving this into the collegiate realm, there's going to be a lot of new opportunity and there's going to be a lot of failure, as you spoke to earlier, right? This is going to be an ebb and flow, a trial process. But it needs to happen. And I'm hoping, as a byproduct or a ripple of this coming downstream to the athletes sooner, is that high schools and companies like yourself will be forced to evolve their curriculum to make sure that, you know, when you graduate high school, you understand what compounding interest is, because there's going to be a real opportunity for you to earn money, or you're going to be able to understand about, you know, we just had Eric Cusin on the show and talk about STAR and, you know, more holistic practices to say, hey, I need to remove myself from this digital vortex. So I'm going to work on breathing techniques, or I'm going to work on meditation. And so, and so I think it's going to be a really turbulent ride to get there, because the powers that be don't really invite change or welcome change. But there is a big force coming from, you know, athletes in the millennium generation and below to say, hey, we're a human and then an athlete, and we have to be started, you know, we have to start approaching us that way. And so, you know, this is actually a fun little segment here. You know, so Checkpoint is the initial break-in of who you are, what you're doing, where things are going. But we're going to launch a subsequent series called Check In. And so it's going to be really fun in 6 months or a year to bring you back on the show and what we've hypothesized versus where the reality is, because the landscape is changing just so fast. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you know, you have been in this space for a while, you're drinking the Kool-Aid. What are a couple things that you see on the horizon that are just going to be monumental impacts over the next, let's call it 12 to 18 months?
Yeah, I think we're seeing some of them already. I think COVID kind of spurred a lot of them in sports, but I think one is the lack of public policy in sports is 100% going to flip on its head. You're already starting to see it, but you're going to start to see, you know, I won't say politics, but campaigns, policies, initiatives, social justice, all these things. It's going to be an active part of sports for beyond, you know, just continuing to grow. You're going to see an influence of public policy representatives on teams, government affairs, or, you know, engagement contacts are going to be working for leagues and teams if they aren't already. And you're just going to see a groundswell of sports companies, sports teams, sports leagues, sports associations start to work more with the political landscape of their states, of their cities, of the country and as a whole. And I think there's been such a taboo on that for the last, you know, 100 plus years, really. That's the glass kind of shattered on that the last 4 years, and especially this year, just with everything going on, as you know, in my opinion, it rightly should be. You know, athletes do have, like you said, human first. They have a right to express their opinions and support what they want to support. But I think from an industry side, you're going to see that fear of choosing a side in a debate, or choosing a side in a political campaign or initiative, that's going to totally change. You're going to see government involvement, and I won't say from the government, but just like that partnership is going to happen, where you're going to see teams investing with government executives to say, we're going to invest in this thing in our community, and we're working with City Councilman X to do it. That wasn't happening before. It's not even happening right now, but that's definitely something that's coming. You brought up name, image, and likeness. It's going to totally change the landscape of youth sports, I think, all the way through professional. And I think that the reason it's going to affect professional is, unfortunately, I think you're going to see some people not necessarily make it to the pros, because there's so much pressure, there's so much risk at the college level. You know, I think you've seen it now, where a lot of athletes burn out by 23, 24. And I think we'll see a big change in the youth landscape, especially as this name, image, and likeness comes back. I think you're going to see a groundswell push from, let's just have kids play sports for fun instead of specialize at age 8 and try and be the next LeBron James, because those are the ones that really do see that drop off at the end. You know, when they hit that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to see that.
Oh man, so that's been one of the hot button issues for me, is as technology has permeated the space of sports, you know, there is very little division between politics, sports, society, right? It's all sort of blanketed together. And I think that, you know, balance needs to stay in there, because, you know, sports is a great escape from reality, right? And so I'll be really curious to see how that unfolds. But you bring up one point, and I'll be fascinated to see how this shakes out, but technology is providing the ability for athletes to become hyper focused on a sport, and it's almost neglecting some of the core principles and core foundations that athletes get from playing multiple disciplines instead of specializing so early. And so it's been one of my passions to say, just play sports. just play sports. And then as you get older, there is time to specialize.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I think that will help with the overall holistic mentality. It won't be so tied to your identity. So really exciting. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
It is changing so fast, but hey, we're along for the ride. And I couldn't think of a better person, you and Miriam and the rest of the crew that is really helping the athlete. This is such a neglected piece of the pie that I think is one of the more valuable ones. So, love what you're doing on the professional side. As we start to wrap up, Danielle, going to shift to the personal side here.
All right.
So I know you're from the Baltimore, D.C. area. You've done a lot of cool things in your life just from our conversations. But I'm curious if you could shed some light to our listeners and tell them one thing you've done in your life that you would recommend they do or experience in theirs. What would that be and why?
Yeah, it's such a good question. You know, I think for me, there's so many things that I didn't think I would recommend to people, but now I do. And I would say the one that I would say for listeners is find that opportunity to go somewhere where you don't necessarily have that safety net or support system. Take that risk, whether it's move to a place where you don't know anyone, like I've done, start that business you were scared to start, even though it might not be the perfect time, right? I would say do something that you want to do and don't worry about if conditions are perfect. Don't worry about that. And remove the safety net, because I think we get really comfortable with our safety nets and it limits us sometimes. And so I would say, you know, for this example, move somewhere where you don't know anyone, take advantage of this virtual work life and move somewhere new and try something different. But really just take a risk and not necessarily worry if conditions are perfect or if the time is right. Cause you know, reality check, the time is never perfect. So you definitely need that safety net to not limit you. That's what I would suggest.
Wow. that was not scripted, but you listeners have been tuning into the last however many episodes we're at now. Danielle, I can't make this up. I mean, we're over 75% of folks that I brought on this show that have answered it almost verbatim to what you just said. And I think that to me is the through line of forward facing or, you know, being fortuitous in this environment. It's the ability to learn how to fail forward. There's never the right time. And the more you gain in perspective, ultimately, the more relatable you become in this world. And that to me seems to be one of the biggest through lines of successful people, agnostic of the industry.
Yeah.
You, my friend, are living, breathing, you're doing it. And I just couldn't be happier that folks like yourself are at the reign of really helping athletes become more holistic humans and ultimately making this place 1% better than we found it. So Danielle, before we wrap up, any last minute thoughts for the listeners, and please let them know how they can learn more about Tackle What's Next and get in touch with you.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thank you so much for having me on. It was so much fun to chat with you. And, you know, I appreciate all the kind words. And again, you know, I agree with all of your previous guests as well. Like it really is an agnostic, agnostic of the industry. It's taking risk and moving forward and not being afraid to fail, which is easier said than done. But yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about what we're doing. If you are interested in learning more, you can find us at tacklewhatsnext.com. We're on social media at tacklewhatsnext. Again, always open to chatting with athletes or non-athletes that just might have value or resources to share for our athletes, both in college and professional. But really, really excited to see what the future holds. And we're excited, like you said, the industry is changing rapidly. And we're excited to be on this ride with everyone and hopefully see some really good things come out of it. So thanks again for the opportunity to share.
Amazing. Well, for all you listeners, I highly recommend, we're going to post all the links beneath this video so you can reach out and get in touch with Danielle. But we have some big guests here on the horizon that are pioneers and leaders in change. So until next time, guest, I'm going to leave you with the cliffhanger. Be sure to check yourself.